So good evening, everyone. I'm just taking a look at who's out there in the wide Zoom Zendo, and people are turning on their video so I can see them. That's great. So we're going to shift gears a little bit after our past month of looking at the breakout room box just appeared on my screen. After looking at Zen art for the past month, we're going to switch gears, and we're going to focus on Dogen Zenji this month. If you hear me say Dogen Zenji or read Dogen Zenji, it means basically Zen teacher Dogen or Zen master Dogen. Zenji means Zen teacher. And it's a common way of referring to Dogen, who is the founder of Soto Zen in Japan. And we do an annual weekend Dogen study retreat, which Michael will be leading the 20th and 21st of this month. So this is your warm-up, your Dogen warm-up leading up to that. If you are able to attend that, that's great. And if not, that's fine too. The writings of Dogen were pretty much completely lost from view in some storehouse for over 400 years. But they have come in modern times to be appreciated far beyond Soto Zen circles, and Dogen's recognized worldwide for the for his unique philosophy and way of working with language. The Dogen scholar Stephen Heine says, Dogen's poetic and philosophical works are characterized by a continual effort to express the inexpressible, by perfecting imperfectible speech through the creative use of wordplay, neologism, and lyricism. So neologism is making up. He would make up new words. And lyric, you know, is very poetic, as well as recasting of traditional expression. So he would take a classic koan and kind of turn it inside out and upside down and look at it in a fresh way. So he was a very original writer and thinker. But he also, I think, expresses the deep core and heart of our practice very beautifully. Dogen's writing can be definitely intimidating, and many people think of his writing as being very intimidating to the ordinary reader or to a Zen beginner, but I don't think it needs to be. And that's why we have this Dogen retreat every year, to kind of invite people in or demystify Dogen. I think a little orientation to some of Dogen's key concepts and the way he uses words goes a long way. It helps sort of unlock or unpack Dogen. So that's what I hope to do a little bit in these coming weeks. And Michael will too on his weekend. But what I want to do is focus on two texts that complement each other. Fukan Zazengi, which can be translated as, translated different ways. General advice on the principles of Zazen is one way, or recommending Zazen to all people is another way. Fukan means kind of general or universal. Zazen means sitting meditation. And Gi is kind of like principles of Zazen, for general principles or for everyone. We chant this one when we're doing longer retreat in Sesshin. It makes for a bit of a long chant. but many of you are familiar with it. And Dogen's emphasis in Fukan Zazengi is on the oneness of practice and realization. And we'll talk more about this. And his other emphasis is on the core practice of Zazen, Zazen itself, which he describes as, in his famous words, think non-thinking. And we'll talk about that next week. But in Fukan Zazengi, Dogen makes no mention of how we can actualize our practice in our daily lives. He doesn't talk about the precepts, he doesn't talk about the paramitas, which we studied and practiced with in our fall practice period. He doesn't talk about the bodhisattva vows. It's just, you know, zazen. So in contrast, the other text that I want to talk about is called Shushogi. Shusho is practice and realization, and gi again is principles, so principles of practice and realization. And this one is a collection of excerpts from Dogen's teachings. It's kind of a Reader's Digest Dogen, and it was compiled in 1890, primarily for instructing lay people. And it's chanted daily in Japanese Zen monasteries, but it's not familiar in Western Soto Zen practice. And I think the reason for that is because its emphasis is on the practices of repentance, the precepts, the bodhisattva vows, and gratitude. And these are practices that are traditionally considered appropriate for lay people. And Zazen, it makes no mention of Zazen at all. Zazen would be considered the practice of the monastics, traditionally. But of course, we Westerners wanted, you know, we want the Zazen, right? So many Westerners come to Zen practice to learn how to meditate. And because after all, that's the way to get enlightened, isn't it? And not have to deal with the annoying human problems of everyday life. Well, we find out that it's not that, it's not quite like that once we've practiced for a while. And Dogen challenges this view throughout his teachings. So we'll, this is his, the really, the unity of practice and realization is core to Dogen. So I'm going to talk more about the Shushogi in the last 2 weeks of this series. But my purpose in using these two contrasting but complementary texts is to ask, what's essential? What's the essential message? What are the essential messages and core texts of Dogen for our times and our practice as lay practitioners? If I were going to create a kind of little Dogen compendium or chantable digest of Dogen, what would I choose? So I'm going to invite you all to think about that. You know, what's really speaks to you from Dogen in your life now? Because of course Dogen lived a very long time ago. He was born in 1200. And he died in 1253. He was the illegitimate son of a high-ranking court official. And his mother died when he was quite young. He was only 7. And the legend goes that that was a very key turning point in his life, seeing the incense smoke go up as the priest came to chant for her after she died, and he realized that all life is impermanent. So he ordained as a young monk in the very powerful at that time Tendai sect in Kyoto, and he practiced on Mount Hiei, which is a mountain in the northwest part of Kyoto. And a core teaching in that sect of Buddhism, this is before Zen had arrived from China at all, the core teaching was that it was of original nature. That enlightenment is our true original nature and not something that we achieve by practice. So Dogen, even as a boy, struggled with the sort of incongruity between this doctrine and the obvious fact that the Buddha himself, not to mention generations of Dharma ancestors, practiced meditation devotedly for years. So why practice if we are inherently a Buddha nature? So Dogen became dissatisfied as a young man and left Mount Hiei and went to practice at Kenninji, which was the very first Rinzai temple established in Kyoto, founded by Eisai, who brought Rinzai Zen from China to Japan, and then Dogen practiced with his successor, Myozen. And when Dogen was 23 years old, he went with his teacher, Myozen, to China on a dangerous voyage by ship. And he spent about 5 years there. His teacher died there in China. But he was still dissatisfied with the teachers he practiced with and the emphasis on koan practice. Until he found a Soto, or in Chinese, Caodong teacher, Ru Jing, who was the perfect match for him. And he experienced the practice of spacious, all-inclusive sitting meditation that he brought back and taught in Japan, and which has come down to us. So Fukan Zazengi was one of the very first writings that he did after coming back from China, before even going out and starting to teach on his own. So he was fired up about Zazen, you know, coming back from China, and this is what he wanted to share with everyone. So let's take a look at the text. Don't worry if you don't have it in front of you. You can look at it later, but if you do have it, please read along. That's fine. I will read and comment as we go. So it begins. The way is basically perfect and all-pervading. How could it be contingent upon practice and realization? So this is what Dogen, as a young monk on Mount Hiei, asked. Buddha nature is all-pervading, right? Enlightenment does not depend on our practice. It's not something we accomplish or get. So he's gonna do a series of back and forth questions here. The first is how can it be contingent upon practice and realization? Then he asks, the Dharma vehicle is free and untrammeled. What need is there for concentrated effort? So he makes a statement and then he questions. Buddha nature is expressed naturally and freely in our lives. We don't have to try to produce it. And then he says, indeed, the whole body is far beyond the world's dust. Who could believe in a means to brush it clean? Our being is pure just as it is. It's not a matter of cleaning away the dust of imperfection. So here he's making a reference to the great legend of the sixth Zen ancestor, Huineng, in the famous passage from the Platform Sutra, in which the fifth ancestor, Hongren, asked the monks to write a poem expressing the essence of mind. And the one who was most successful, the one who wrote the best poem, would be his successor. So the senior monk, Shen Xu, confident of his victory, wrote, body is the Bodhi tree, mind a bright mirror on a stand. Polish it continuously, and let no dust collect. You know, so that's the practice of cleansing the mind. You know, clearing away the dust of the mind. He posted the poem on the wall, and Huineng, who at that time was an illiterate woodcutter who was making a delivery to the monastery, asked someone to read the poem to him. And then he responded with his own verse and asked if it could be written down and posted on the wall. And his verse was, "Bodhi has no tree, this mirror has no stand. Originally, there is no single thing. Where can any dust land?" So this is the opposite view. So the legend goes that Hongren, the abbot, immediately recognized Huineng's understanding and secretly designated him as his successor. But this guy's an illiterate woodcutter, so he knew that the monks would not accept him. So he sent Hongren into hiding and told him to wait till the time was ripe for him to reappear and take his place and lead the monks. Famous story. So it's not that our Buddha nature is somehow pristine and above the dust and suffering of the world, but in the truth of emptiness, what we say often translate in English as emptiness or perhaps boundlessness, all existence, including the dust, is dynamic, ever-changing, interconnected, nothing left out. And so then Dogen gives us another paired argument. It is never apart from one, right where one is. What is the use of going off here and there to practice? He's saying enlightenment isn't something we're going to find in Japan or California or over the rainbow. It's right here in the midst of our messy lives, right here. So in these arguments, Dogen is speaking from the perspective of the absolute, right? The unified, everything, all-inclusive dimension of existence. But this is only one of the two, what are called the two truths, right? The absolute and the relative, or the perspective of unity and oneness. And this is what our series on Sunday mornings is describing. Our Sangha leader, three of our Sangha leaders are giving talks on the identity of relative and absolute, another famous text. So then Dogen gives the other side. He gives the side of the relative. He says, "And yet, if there is the slightest discrepancy, the way is as distant as heaven from earth. If the least like or dislike arises, the mind is lost in confusion." So that's the world of our everyday lives, making our typical blunders and arguments and judgments. As soon as we slip into judging mind, as soon as we hang on to what we want and push away what we don't want, we are in the world of samsara, just like that, hair's breadth difference. And yet as distant from heaven as heaven from earth. So Dogen continues, "Suppose one gains pride of understanding and inflates one's own enlightenment, glimpsing the wisdom that runs through all things, attaining the way and clarifying the mind, raising an aspiration to escalate the very sky." You know, we can get pretty excited if we have, a great insight in the middle of sesshin sometimes. We think, yes. But he says, one is making the initial partial excursions about the frontiers and is still somewhat deficient in the way of total emancipation. So he's cautioning. He's saying, you know, suppose you have one of those great, deep opening experiences into the truth of emptiness, of boundlessness, of non-self, of non-separation. And you think, wow, this is it, I've got it. In some traditions, a teacher will actually verify your enlightenment at that point, which might make you even more inflated. You might be so inspired, you feel you need to spread the word to all those poor, unenlightened sufferers out there in the world. And here's where a wise teacher will put on the brakes and encourage you to simply continue with your practice. People sometimes can spend years wishing for a repeat of some dramatic experience they had early on in their practice and being dissatisfied with what's actually going on right now. It takes a lifetime, at least, to integrate this practice into every aspect of our lives, including our habitual behaviors, our relationships, our livelihood, all that. We've all heard stories of spiritual teachers who've skipped over some aspect of this integration and ended up doing great harm. Dogen continues, "Need I mention the Buddha who was possessed of inborn knowledge? The influence of his 6 years of upright sitting is noticeable still. Or Bodhidharma's transmission of the mind seal. The fame of his 9 years of wall sitting is celebrated to this day. Since this was the case with the saints of old, how can we today dispense with negotiation of the way?" So he's saying, even if the Buddha, if even the Buddha, who, according to legend, had a huge head start on us from birth, from his lifetimes of bodhisattva practice, still practiced for years to actualize this inborn knowledge. Of course we need to practice. And the same goes for Bodhidharma, the Indian monk who brought Zen practice from India to China in the 5th century. He is said to have sat in a cave facing the wall for 9 years until his legs atrophied. So Dogen's saying, if they had to, you know, even these eminent ancestors had to practice to actualize their realization, well, so do we. And here's what he recommends. He says, "You should therefore cease from practice based on intellectual understanding, pursuing words and following after speech, and learn the backward step that turns your light inwardly to illuminate yourself." That's that beautiful line, you know, to take the backward step and turn the light inward to illuminate the self. He's not saying that there's no place at all for language in our practice. And he certainly used language himself masterfully. But we can't do this practice by reading books. We can get some pointers, as you may remember those Zen paintings of the finger pointing to the moon. We can use the text for pointers, but we have to do the practice with our entire body and mind. And only then can we experience the truth of our being that has been there all along. And then we have to live the practice. We have to actualize the practice in each moment in our daily lives. But in that practice of turning the light inwards, taking the backward step, sitting in a quiet place, in this noble posture, then Dogen says, "Body and mind of themselves will drop away and your original face will be manifest." We tend to think our body and our mind belong to us. They're what give us our unique existence and separate us from, you know, the next person who's different. But when that sense of separation drops away, when it's not my body and my mind so much as body and mind within this matrix of being. When that happens, even the words are tricky. I say, well, realize our Buddha nature. It's not that we realize our Buddha nature. We are our Buddha nature. We get out of the way. We manifest our Buddha nature. Dogen continues, "If you want to attain suchness, you should practice suchness without delay." So suchness is one way of translating the Chinese word that's used for the Sanskrit word tata, T-A-T-H-A. Sometimes it's translated as thusness or just this. And it refers to that state of just being, just this right now, just this moment. And one of the names of the Buddha is the Tathagata, which means the one who comes, thus comes, or comes from the just this, thusness. So after this whole argument, Dogen ends up saying, if you want to attain just this, thusness, you have to practice. You have to pay attention and manifest your life right now, in this moment. I think we have to understand his use of the word attain in terms of his teaching on that the non-separateness of practice and realization. So maybe a better way to paraphrase that last line, rather than if you want to attain suchness, you should practice suchness without delay. I'm going to reword that as if you want to realize thusness or manifest thusness, you must practice. You must actualize this realization with your own body and mind right now. There is no other way. So, he says, you should therefore cease from practice. Wait, sorry. Our practice is to take that backward step, to stop our mad rush to be doing or thinking something all the time. To attend to our own body and mind, to our experience, just as it is. And the more intimate we become with our own experience, the more it opens up and expands. Body and mind drop away of themselves. Naturally, we're not making it happen. And our original face will be manifest. We experience our boundless interconnection with all existence. Dogen puts it another way in the famous passage from Genjo Koan. I think Genjo Koan maybe is the most kind of distilled expression of Dogen's teaching. That comes a little later. But the famous lines, to study the way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be actualized by the 10,000 things. And when actualized by the 10,000 things, your body and mind, as well as the bodies and minds of others, drop away. So instead of pushing ourselves forward all the time, we meet the 10,000 things. We meet the moment. We meet what's before us, and separation drops away. After this, Dogen goes, he starts to go into detail about how to practice Zazen in this way. He says, for Sanzen, and that's the equivalent of Zazen, Sanzen, a quiet room is suitable. Eat and drink moderately. Sanzen is, in some Zen traditions, the word Sanzen is equivalent to Doksan, meaning a private meeting with a teacher. San means meeting. And Doksan means individual meeting. So we could call Sanzen, meaning as the Zen of meeting. The Zen of meeting. And that might mean meeting another person, but it also means meeting our experience in each moment. Meeting ourselves, meeting our own body and mind. I love the sense of the of meeting, meeting. And to support ourselves to do that, we simplify our environment. We simplify the sensory input by sitting in a quiet place, in a zendo, finding a corner in your own home that's quiet. And he says, eat and drink enough, but not too much. And then he said, we cast aside all involvements and cease all affairs. Do not think good or bad. Do not administer pros and cons. Cease all the movements of the conscious mind, the gauging of all thoughts and views. Not so easy. Not so easy, is it, to drop all the pros and cons, the judgments, the evaluating. You know, those are very strong habits of mind that we have. And of course, in the relative world, remember the relative and the absolute, in the relative world, we do have to evaluate and exercise what the Buddha called discriminating wisdom. Discriminating wisdom is being able to make decisions, respond to the circumstances around us without the push and pull of our ego, our self-focused judgments. So it is possible to function in daily life in the world. That's what our practice supports. But overall, I think we actually do a better job if we think a lot less than we typically do. We can function in our daily lives with a lot less thinking, a lot less worrying and fussing than we typically do, right? In fact, sometimes we think better if we have spent some quiet time. Have you ever noticed that? Yeah. Not that kind of obsessive, fretful, repetitive thinking that distracts us from our actual present experience. And usually that kind of thinking kind of distorts our view. Usually it's narrow. It's seen through a lens of our conditioned fears and anxieties. So that's the kind of mental activity that Dogen's asking us to let drop away. We don't have to push it away, but allow it to drop away, to release. You may have noticed that if you scold yourself and tell the mind to drop it, you know, like a puppy with a sock, and you say drop it, they just hold on harder, right? The mind is like that. But if you patiently bring the attention back to the breath and the body, the mind will ease its grip, right? That beautiful expression, opening the hand of thought, just releasing. And you have to do this with kindness, not beating yourself up for being such a terrible meditator because your mind is so unsettled. And often when a mind state is persistent and aversive, we have to shine the light of awareness on it a little more closely and attend. With patience and kindness, noticing our body sensations that accompany those mind states, noticing the habitual patterns or the verbal tape loops, but with a sense of curiosity and questioning, not judgment, and a willingness to let go of our identification with those thoughts and feelings as me and mine. And sometimes it's helpful to use the practices of metta, loving-kindness, or karuna, compassion, to help us soften and open the heart when we're in persistent aversive states. But we do that, we might take up those actual traditional practices, but we also do this implicitly. This practice is implicitly a practice of compassion, a compassionate practice, when we sit with deep acceptance of our human lives. as they are. Dogen doesn't use those technical words of, you know, metta, karuna, very much. He does some, but I think there's an implicit deep compassion in this practice. Dogen says, have no designs on becoming a Buddha. You're in this for the long haul. He never tires of stressing that this unity of practice and realization, Shusho Ito. If we come to this practice lusting after enlightenment, we're going to be frustrated and discouraged when those old habit patterns rear their ugly heads again. We have to continue to actualize and integrate this practice until, it permeates every aspect of our lives. Dogen says, Sanzen has nothing to whatever to do with sitting or lying down. Another translation is more interpretive of this line and says, how could being a Buddha be limited to sitting or not sitting? And I think that helps us with that line. Of course, in practice we sit Sazen, but don't think it's something other than your whole life, or that, you know, if you break a leg or you become quite ill, you can still practice lying down. There are many ways to practice. It's such a simple practice, but it's not easy, as you know. Sometimes it feels really, really hard. But the physical posture and form of Zazen, as I said when we started this evening, helps us to settle into our practice and increase our confidence in it over time. And Dogen gives more specific instructions about our Zazen, which we will look at next week. But right now, I would like to give you a little bit of time to exchange some reflections with each other. And I'm going to pop you into breakout rooms of about three. So if you aren't able to stay, I'd go ahead and bow out now, because I don't want anyone to end up in a room all by themselves. And I'd like you to consider these two questions. When is it that you feel this kind of need, that you need to do something or go somewhere to get somewhere else, something else, you know, whether it's enlightenment or a degree or, you know, when do you feel that sense of, I need to, it's out there, it's away from me, I need to go somewhere or get something. When do you feel like that? And then when do you feel a sense of thusness? Just this now, non-separation. Okay, see if you can come up with an example of each, or one or two examples of each, and share with each other. So I'm going to pop you into threes. Each person will just have a couple minutes, 2 or 3 minutes. And so you'll self-time, make sure each person gets a chance, and then I'll give you a sort of 1 minute warning when it's time to come back. Okay, so,
I should turn mine off. So we're not in the...
Oh, okay. Michael's going to go turn his screen off so he doesn't get counted. Hurry up!